This is the ninth dialogue between Jay Krishnamurti and David Bohm in Gushdad, 1975.
I think your watch is a little bit fast.
Oh.
I'm not, don't go on. I try to be punctual.
Well, perhaps we should, go on with what we're discussing the other time, you know, to clarify some of these points. And we were discussing the action of truth, you know, and the fact that sum up, I think on one discussion said that, as I can understand, that the thought process may, if it is straight and healthy, it may become aware of the action of truth.
Yes.
And move in harmony with that. And on the other hand, the thought process, when it is distorted and conditioned, may not do that.
Yes, that's right.
But truth can actually act physically in the brain cells, is what we were coming
that's
to.
That's what we were talking,
to,
yes.
To bring it right. Now, and I thought...
Sir,
yeah,
would that be accurate?
I don't know. I mean, you see, we're trying to go into that.
I think so, but...
Yeah, I know you think so, yes. You see,
I feel that way.
I think we should discuss it a little while.
A little while, yeah, I think so, too.
Because it's a very important point, and it's quite
yes.
contrary to our traditional scientific knowledge.
Nowadays, after reading that article...
Well, perhaps not after reading about parapsychology and so on, but since the scientific tradition is changing, too. But,
too, yes.
But anyway, we could say, see, the brain is material... Now, I think we're saying that matter exists. It has an actuality apart from thought, but we don't know it. You see, all we know only some of it. We say that's reasonable. In
yes.
other words, the complete depths of matter are unknown to us and will perhaps never be known. We may know more and more. And the brain is being made of matter, constituted of matter. We could never follow the complete unknown depths in which thought arises in matter, right? But thought has become conditioned over the ages, we said, partly by heredity and partly through tradition and culture.
Tradition, culture.
Environment. And it has been conditioned to self-deception, to falsify, you know, to distort.
Yes.
And this is in the material structure of the brain. Now, and then we say truth. Well, I would like to add a point there.
Yes.
That we could, in one sense, say that this conditioning constitutes a subtle kind of brain damage. That is...
That's right.
See, I'd like to go on to that. If we take a piece of a delicate electronic equipment, such as an amplifier or a computer... Now, if that is overloaded, then there is distortion. Now, if you keep on overloading it, you gradually may break down the parts, and therefore it will distort more.
Yes.
Now, so we could say that the kind of conditioning we were talking about, the conditioning which gives great importance to thought and to the self in the center, creates an overload. It overloads, distorts, and gradually damages the brain.
Damages the brain, yes.
In a way that is perhaps too subtle to be detected by scientific instruments, except when it has gone very far.
Yes.
Now,
completely.
But still, it is there, you see. Now,
yes. Are you saying, sir, that when the brain is overloaded...
Mm-hmm.
By environment, by economic conditions, social...
By fear and sorrow.
Sorrow and all the rest, all the things that are going on in human beings. It does damage the brain cells.
Yes.
I think that is so. Yes.
Yes.
That can be accepted.
Yes, there's a real physical, chemical damage to the brain cells.
Yes.
And those damaged brain cells... will produce thought that is inherently distorted. And therefore, as thought tries to correct that damage, it does so from a distorted...
It
because it is distorted, it must make it worse.
That's quite. That's simple. Right.